Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
All right, good morning. We're doing trending topics. I was on the other phone with somebody from The Gambia, and we can see if we can get her on as a guest. And we might even, we're going to organize a field trip to Gambia. Man, the place I really want to do a field trip with you guys is Liberia. That's number one, Liberia, because there's some serious American roots over there. All right, so today's trending topics, because I didn't have enough time to organize anything for you guys today. So trending topics, anything you guys want to talk about. I'm waiting for, my laptop goes through. I think it's an internet connection. Well, maybe I need a new laptop. Oh, man, I got the time set on here all wrong. Okay. All right, well, 619-768-2945 is...
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then it... Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me. Show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package It's going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity weight. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off. Because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad, Cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post. And the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude.
That bitch good, nigga.
Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
Kid, that nigga kid. That nigga hurting himself.
You from New State.
Had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, But the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pan-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-Civil Rights Movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is, and it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Trending topics. I didn't have anything time to prepare this morning. I was on the phone. Actually, I was on the app. You know, what's amazing about the phone? It's better than Batman's utility belt. We have, if you got a smartphone, we have more anybody, regardless of income. If you got a smartphone, and they're all over the globe, and they're probably more low-income people that have them than high-income people because they're more low-income people. But you can be on Section 8 welfare. Well, you can have a smartphone, and many people do who are on Section 8 and some type of, in New Zealand, they call it the benefit. Matter of fact, you know what? A quick story. I had a couple of chat buddies. I lost track of them, but I did get to meet them in person. I guess you can call them. I call them chat buddies, but pen pals. They were from New Zealand, and when I met them, you would probably describe them as, you know, by their activities, traveling activities. Now, mind you, they lived in I guess they're still living in New Zealand. So they did a tour of the United States. When I met them, they just came from another destination. I forgot, somewhere here in the United States. Then they stayed in the D.C. area. That's where I met them. Two grandmothers, okay? And they stayed in I took them to where they were staying, a hotel, a motel. And then met them the next day and then gave them a ride up to the airport where they were going from there to New York City. And they had, accommodations and, boots on the ground help there. But now here's the story. These are two grandmothers that were globetrotting, staying in places. I mean, they didn't stand, they knew how to live on the road. But both of them were on, as they called it in New Zealand, the benefit. Over here we would call it welfare. But they were living large and living. And when I say large, they were living well. They knew how to spend their money. When they went to New York, they stayed at a hostel. If anybody is not familiar with a hostel, hostels are basically, very inexpensive places to stay. It's better than a hotel. Well, put it this way. You don't have the price-wise, it's better than a hotel or a motel, typically. Like, for instance, I stayed in one in a particular city and or town, and it was pay whatever you think it's worth, and I walked in with I walked in with $100, which isn't much when you're traveling, but. Next day I had $1,500, but I walked in with $100. They didn't ask for anything. They just told me the rules. When you leave, this was a pay-when-you-leave place. Whatever you think it's worth, Here's the, they had a big old bottle there, like one of those water jug containers, like for a water cooler, bigger than that. When you leave, just put your money right in there. You saw a bunch of coins and dollar bills and denominations of bills in that thing. So they invited me in, and I found this place online. And they invited me in, and it was, you know, they had a, I guess, a rap session going. You know, well, that's an old school. There was a discussion going on in about 6-7 people. So I sat on that for about 2, maybe 3 hours. And that's when I got in on it. And this was that night when I got there in the first place. Then before that, you sat in on that. You know, they showed you where you want to sleep. Now, typically, in a lot of hostels, they have bunk beds. So they had, you know, they had two men's quarters there. They had a very clean bathroom and whatnot. Then, you know, snacks, you know, showed you where the snacks was, gave you some snacks. All this without even asking for a penny. Once again, pay when you leave. All right, that's how they had it. So then the next morning, or they told you, you know, in the morning there's breakfast included. So I got breakfast, a place to stay, excellent context. I met a lot of people that are walking the Appalachian Trail. And on the way out the door, I stayed there again on my way back out of the state that I was in. Now, there was another hostel I stayed in, same state, different town, and that was $40 up front, right at the gate. But they had a men's section, a women's section, and a co-ed section. So the first time I stayed there, I'll take whatever I can get. So I stayed in the men's section, and actually I stayed at that place like three times. No, four times. $40. $40 a day. $40 a day. But that included they had snacks, continental breakfast, and it was a real convenient location, and real clean bathroom and everything. Most of the time you're in there private. But that was $40 a day, but the other places pay whatever you think. So both were good. Both were good. All right. So in any event, trending topic. So if there's anything that you guys want to discuss, 619-768-2945, press 1. Yesterday we talked about jacking. One aspect of that is on property taxes, and then we're going to give other solutions on that, and we're going to bring her back, Ms. King. And let's see, I'm in the news. So what do they have? And, of course, if you guys got any trending topic news, that's fine, too. As I said, I was on the phone with somebody from the Gambia this morning. That's what we started maybe a minute. No, we started on time. We had a two-minute cushion to get in here. But they went over to Gambia, and they're loving it. They have a clothing store. They sell American clothing or American brands in Gambia. So they're doing well with that. And we're going to get them on here one day. So for people that are interested in visiting any parts of Africa, they're in the Gambia. And they've moved over there. They don't live in the States anymore. So anyway, but we shall get to... But anyway, 314 area code, your mic is open.
Oh, man, you run ahead of schedule today, L.A.
Yeah, way ahead.
That's great, man. It's always good to see moves toward modernization and improvement efficiency.
Well, we got in with no no technical. Yesterday, everything was frozen up. We started off right, but then the board was frozen. So right now, everything's okay. So hopefully, we can stay that way. Anyway, what's happening on in your neck of the woods?
Well, I was talking to some associates. I'm very happy to see that the movement toward the convention and state is moving on. They need 37 states to sign on to the Article 5, U.S. Constitution Article 5, what it allows the states to do. And they need 37. They got 19. And they're going to move forward, hopefully. And then they're going to start putting handcuffs, curtailing, taking away powers that the federal government has allocated itself.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand that states control the federal government. And what we see now is the federal government has been this way for some time. But as of late, especially with the advent of Donald Trump, we have seen it run completely out of control. Some of these agencies need to be devolved. A lot of aspects of the FBI, Department of Education, Department of Energy, states can do that themselves. This whole thing about federal lands need to be rescinded. Federal government has no authority under the Constitution to own lands that they own today. And the southern border, that's not being tended to as law requires. So this is a gross negligence of the Constitution and the laws. And the people are getting fed up with it. And amongst other things, one of the last is to do this. That's this way. And if it don't work, then, of course, it would be an ultimate event that will occur. So I'm sure that you are a strong proponent of that document. And I might see you out there on the line next time. I guess you have technical problems again.
Yeah, I had to switch phones. I had to keep the host phone. I was having technical difficulties on that, but then called in on another phone where I could quit.
Why don't you get your laptop? Why don't you get your laptop?
I got a laptop, but looks like I might need to get a new one. I can leave you clear.
If it was 1999, I would say, were you still running Vista?
No, it ain't Vista. I've had this laptop for about 4 years.
Yeah, well,
I don't know what it was about 4 years ago.
You just about to learn. You probably running Windows 7.
Yeah, I need to get a new one. But
I would say.
Yeah, because typically I used to get a phone like every 9 months or so.
Yeah.
Well, the one I got in my hand, the phone I'm talking on right now, is less than a year old. It'll be a year old in December. So,
Yeah, getting back to what I was talking about on the convention of states, it's something that's needed, and I think it's going to current and the changes are going to be made. And I just hope it's on either the subject matter or specific amendments and not the Constitution itself, because with the mentality of people today, if you did it on the Constitution itself, and of course, you know, when there is no Constitution, all bets are off. Anything can happen. I mean, you can go out and kill somebody. There's no Constitution that says that we're doing that is illegal. But what do you think about that?
I had to process it. I had to process it. Phrase that question to me again.
Well, talk about the convention of states. Where states going to come together and they're going to revamp the laws and curtail the federal government. Federal government has allocated powers to itself that it wasn't designed to have. And the states have the power over that federal government to bring it back.
That sounds very reasonable, that the states do get to have that convention. That does sound very reasonable.
I mean, you take something like the Commerce Clause.
Mm-hmm.
Commerce Clause only was back in the 1700s as defined. We were talking about a shipment of goods and not control of businesses. And it has been used misappropriately, especially like during the quote-unquote the pandemic, where you shut down businesses. That's beyond the powers of the federal government. They was overreaching, having OSHA to enforce certain pandemic laws that requires the people gathering and mandating that people have vaccinations and all that crazy mess. They're overstepping their bounds, and they need to be reeled in. If not, we're worried about it.
I agree. They need to be reeled in.
You look at the courts. The courts are damn near making laws. Courts are not supposed to, they're not designed to make laws.
They're not supposed to be legislating from the bench.
And a judge hears argument between two parties, and based on the information that both parties present, either the arguments they present, they give an opinion. An opinion is not a law in their case.
That's true. The state attorney general can give an opinion, but that is not a law.
Yeah, and for some reason, the other people just don't want to accept that. If you don't want to accept that, then why do you have local elections? I mean, then if you put less credence in the local officials that you elect than the ones you want to give it all to those at the federal level, you know, politicians at the federal level are controlled by the state, technically, i.e. the people. People should have
the ability. Well, they're the ones who vote them into that. I'd like to do a study of, put together a panel one day, Baltimore City politics. That's an interesting town. They've had, let's see, two mayors that have been, one resigned, well, actually two resigned. They were both black females. One went to federal prison, and their district of attorney, I don't know if she stepped down, but she's got legal hassles in Baltimore City.
Whose fault is that? Is that white people's fault?
No, I'm not going to go there with that.
Well, you have to, because people, that's who you are told is the reason. So whose fault is that? Baltimore has a
Right. I'm looking at Baltimore has, I haven't checked this demographic, but they have, black folks are well represented demographically in Baltimore, number one.
And
number
what did that
two,
mean? What did that mean?
That they have a majority.
Majority
at
what?
At least when it comes to it, when it, for a body count. Matter of fact, I'm going to look it up now.
Body count of what?
But of people, populations of people that live in Baltimore City.
All right, so that's the demographics. So what do you mean that they're well represented?
Well, hold on, we're going to go. All right, when I say well represented politically, Baltimore has a good number of black entrepreneurs, businessmen. Baltimore that the majority of the city council, the last I checked, I'm updating what they do now, were black folk. Chief of police, black. Well, I had to double check on that. District attorney, black. Black mayors. I mean, O'Malley, I don't know what mayor they got in. I think the current mayor of Baltimore is black.
Generally, if you have the demographic,
the money's up there. Black folks have money in Baltimore as well.
Yeah, if the demographics is black, generally the politician is going to be black because that's just the way they behave when it comes down to electing.
Right.
This representation that you make mention of. So my question is, and I hear often.
Now, let me put this in context. Now, with the Freddie Gray case, Freddie Gray, the coroner said he was killed. It was a homicide, which means some human did it. Now, they charged several police officers.
Was it justifiable homicide?
I don't think. Well, put it this way. Every police officer that got charged got acquitted. So now, was it white folks' fault? I don't think you can say that because you had a black district attorney female that charged them. You had a black mayor sitting in office. You had a majority black city council. You had a majority black police force. So white folks had virtually nothing to do with this at all.
And why would they charge them? What did they charge them for?
Manslaughter or second degree murder. I would have to look that up.
Yeah, but how did they physically manslaughter this man, or how did that go down?
I don't know that aspect of the case, but all of them got acquitted. All of them got acquitted.
Yeah.
So
man was transported, he was killed. Now here's the point. What was the policies that was set by the department that instructs its employees on how to carry out tasks? If there wasn't no written policy, then what you're doing is basically leaving it up to the employee to do what they think is right and what's wrong. But if it's going to be some charges level, you have to give those employees instructions.
I have the demographics on Baltimore. Baltimore is 59.2% black. White folk, 39% black. Hispanic, 38.6% black. Asian,
1.1%.
So 59%.
Wait a minute. Hang on for a second. You gave 59%, 38%.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me correct that. As of 2020, Baltimore 62.4% black, white 30.5% black, Latino 5.3%, Asian 2.6%. So, according to the Census Bureau, 62.4% of the people that live in Baltimore, Maryland, are black folks.
Well, those numbers, I think, still add up over 100%, so it might be some either misreading or errors there. But like you say, if you control the acquitting, charging those officers, and they wouldn't give them any policy, directed policy on how to carry out tasks, no one can leave it up to common sense, because common sense don't apply. If you working for an agency or you working for a department or a company, that company's supposed to have operational manuals for its employees. And if they didn't have it, then how are you going to charge the employees for something that happens that goes astray?
I know we got plenty of time. I don't know why I heard 90 seconds. Not a weird time. All right, hold on, Pianki. I wanted to read a headline real quick. Hold on, wait a minute. Where am I? Okay. Man, this is weird. It says 60 seconds, but I got 112. Wait a minute. What? Okay. Let me see what this does. Okay. What? I don't know. All right, we're still here. Real quick headline. Black player covered in cotton by white teammates at a Little League World Series. White players were seen covering a black teammate's head with cotton at a Little League World Series. But league officials claimed Monday that the admittedly racially insensitive optics weren't what they seemed. The incident shared on Twitter by